It takes one motion of my hand, and the prince is dead, I warned him. Oh, come, you're being ridiculous, the big man replied. He continued to walk his horse towards me. My black snorted a query at his beast. For what will you do if we obediently halt here? Stand in our midst and starve to death? Let us go, or I'll kill him, I amended. Equally silly. Where's the benefit to us in that? If we can't have him, he might as well be dead. His voice was deep and resonant, and it carried well. He had a dark, handsome face, and sat his horse like a warrior. In another time and place I would have looked at him and judged him a man worthy of my friendship. Now his followers laughed aloud at my pathetic efforts to defy him. He and his horse came closer still. The big horse stepped high as he came, and his eyes shone with their wit bond. And consider what happens if you do kill him as I advance. Once he's dead, we'll all be very annoyed with you, and you still won't have a chance of escape. I doubt that you can even make us kill you swiftly. So, that's my counteroffer. Give us the boy, and I'll kill you quickly. You have my word on that. Such a kind offer. His grave manner and careful speech convinced me he would honour it. Quick death sounded very appealing when I considered the alternatives. But I hated dying without having the last word. Very well, I conceded. But he costs you more than my life. Release the wolf and the tawny man. Then I'll give you your prince, and you can kill me. The prince stood motionless in the circle of my arm and knife. I scarcely felt him breathe, yet I could feel him listening, as if my words were soaked into him like water into dry earth. The fine web of skill between us warned me that there was something else going on. He reached out with his unholy combination of wit and skill to someone. I readied my muscles, lest the woman wrest control of his body from him. Are you lying? Dutiful asked me so softly that I scarce heard him. But was the question from Dutiful or the cat's woman? I'm telling the truth. I lied sincerely. If they release Lord Golden and the wolf, I'll free you. To your death. And the second throat I'd cut would be mine. The big man on the big horse gave what might have been a chuckle. Too late for that, I'm afraid. They're already dead. No, they aren't. Aren't they? He rode his horse closer. I'd know if the wolf died. He no longer needed to shout for his voice to reach me. He spoke in a confidential manner. And that is why it is so unnatural that you should oppose us. I confess, having you answer that one question alone is enough to make me postpone your death. Warmth for me shone in his eyes, and genuine curiosity came into his voice. Why, in the name of the life and death that Ada and El encircle, do you stand, like this, against your own kind? Do you like what is done to us? The floggings, the hangings, the quartering and burning? Why do you support it? I let my own voice ring out to all of them. Because what you seek to do to this boy is wrong. What the woman did to her cat is wrong. You take to yourself the name of Piebalds, and claim pride in your lineage, yet you go against what the old blood teaches. How can you condone what she has done to her cat, let alone what she wishes to do to the prince? The light in the big man's eyes went cold. He is a farseer. Can anything be done to him that does not merit 1,000 times over? At these words, the prince stiffened in my grasp.
Loudwine, is that truly what you believe?
The youth and incredulity in Dutiful's voice was heartbreaking.
You spoke me fair when I rode with you. You said that eventually I could become the king who would unite all my folk under equal justice. You said...
Loudwine shook his head in disdain for Dutiful's gullibility. I would have said anything to have you come along quietly. I bought time with fair words until the bond was knitted strong enough. I've had signs through the cat that the task is done. Peladine can take you any time now. If there were not a knife at your throat just now, she'd already have you. But Peladine has no wish to die twice. Once was quite enough for her. Hers was a slow death, coughing and gasping as she grew weaker every day. Even my mother's was swifter. They hung her true, but she was not quite dead when they cut her in quarters to feed their fire. And my father, well, I am sure that the time in which he watched regal Farseer's soldiers dispose of my mother seemed to last years. He smiled unpleasantly at Dutiful. So you see, my family's relationship with the Farseers is a long one. The debt is an old one, Prince Dutiful. I think the only pleasant time that Peladine had in her last years were the hours in which we spent planning this for you. It is only fitting that a Farseer should actually restore a life for the ones that have been taken from me. And there it was. The seed of hate from which all this had sprung. Once more, the Farseers did not have to see far to know whence their ill fortune came. The prince's pitfall was built from his uncle's arrogance and cruelty. Hatred was the legacy Regal had bequeathed to me as well, but my heart closed against the sympathy that flared in me. The Piebalds were my enemies. Regardless of what they had suffered, they had no right to this boy. "And what was Peladine to you, Loudwine?" I asked evenly. I suspected I knew the answer, but he surprised me. "She was my womb sister, my twin, as like to me as woman can be to man. Bereft of her, I am the last of my line. Is that reason enough for you?" "No, but it is for you. You would do anything to have her live again in human flesh. You'd help her steal this boy's body to house her mind, even though that goes against every old blood teaching we hold dear." I let my voice ring with righteousness. If my words shocked any of his warriors, they hid it well. Loudwine halted his horse a sword's length away from us. He leaned down to fix me with his stare. "There's more to it than a brother's grief. Break your lackey's bonds to the Farseer family and think for yourself. Think for your own kind. Forget our old customs of limiting ourselves. Old blood is a gift from Ida, and we should use it. There is great opportunity here for all of us who bear old blood. We have a chance to be heard. Let the Farseers admit to themselves what legend has long said is true. The wit is in their blood as thick as the skill. This boy will be king someday. We can make him ours. When he steps into power, he can end the persecution we have endured so long." I bit my lower lip in a show of thoughtfulness. Loudwine could little imagine what decision I truly weighed. If I did as he wished, the Farseer line would still have its heir, in body at least. Nettle could live a life of her own, free of fate's entangling web, and there might be good in it for the old blood and the six duchies. All I had to do was surrender Dutiful to a life of torment. The fool and my wolf would go free, and Nettle could live, and perhaps the old blood could eventually be free of persecution. Even I could live, give up a boy I scarcely knew to buy all that. One single life weighed against all those others. I made my decision. "If I thought you spoke true," I began, and then halted. I stared at Loudwine.
"You might come over to us."
He believed me to be a man caught between death and compromise. I let uncertainty show in my eyes, and then gave the briefest possible nod. I reached up one-handed and tugged at my collar, loosening it. Jinnah's beads peeped out at him. "You like me," I begged him. "Trust my words. Desire me for a friend." Then I spoke my coward's speech. "I could be useful to you, Loudwine. The queen expects Lord Golden to bring the prince back to her. If you kill him and the prince goes back alone, they will wonder what became of Golden and why. If you let us live and we take the prince back to them, well, I can explain away the changes in his demeanor. They'll accept him back unquestioningly." His eyes wandered over me, deliberating. I watched him convince himself.
"And Lord Golden would go along with what you said?"
I made a small sound of derision. "He has not the wit. He has only his eyes to tell him that we have regained the prince alive and unharmed. He will think only of his hero's welcome at Buckkeep. He will believe that I negotiated the prince's freedom and be glad to claim the credit for it at court. In fact, he will witness me doing it. Take us to where you hold him. Let us make a show for him. Send him on his way with my wolf, assuring him that the prince and I will follow. I nodded sagely, as if confirming the thought to myself. Actually, it is best if he is well on his way. He should not witness the woman taking over the boy. He might wonder what was amiss with him. Let Lord Golden be gone first.
You seem very concerned for his safety, Loudwine probed.
I shrugged. He pays me well to do very little, and he tolerates my wolf. We are both getting on in years. Such a post is not easily found. Loudwine grinned, but in his eyes I saw his secret contempt for my servant's ethic. I opened my collar more. He glanced at Dutiful. The boy's eyes were fixed on his face.
A problem, Loudwine observed softly. The boy has no benefit in our bargain. He may well betray it to Lord Golden.
I felt Dutiful draw breath to speak. I tightened my grip on him, asking for silence while I thought, but he spoke anyway. My interest is in living, he said clearly, however poor an existence it may become, and in my cat, for she is true to me, even if your sister is false to both of us. I will not abandon the cat to her. And if she takes my body from me, then perhaps that is the price I must pay for letting a piebald make a fool of me with promises of fellowship and love. His voice was steady and pitched to carry. Beyond Loudwine's shoulder, I saw two of his riders look aside, as if Dutiful's words pained them. But no one spoke up on his behalf. A thin smile twisted Loudwine's mouth.
Then our pact is made.
He extended his free hand towards me, as if we would seal the bargain with a touch. He smiled disarmingly at me.
Take your knife from the boy's throat.
I gave him a wolf's smile in return. I think, not just yet. You have said this Peladine can take him at any time. Perhaps, if she does, you will think you have no need of me. You might kill me. Let your sister have the boy, and then present him to Lord Golden, the hostage, free to return to court. No. We will do it my way. Besides, this lad may change his feelings about what we do. The knife helps him remember that my will is what will be. I wondered if Dutiful would hear my promise enfolded in those words. I kept my eyes fixed on Loudwine and did not vary my tone. Let me see Lord Golden remounted and set free, with my wolf at his side. Then when I see how you keep your word, I will surrender us both to your will. Feeble, feeble plan. My true strategy went no further than getting them to take us to the Fool and Night Eyes. I continued to hold my smile and gaze on Loudwine, but I was aware of the others edging their horses closer. My grip on the knife was steady. At some point, the prince had reached up to grasp my wrist. I had scarcely been aware of his touch, for although it looked like he resisted my blade, he did not. In truth, it was almost as if he held the knife steady against his own throat.
"We will do it your way," Loudwine conceded at last.
It was an awkward business to mount my black while keeping my knife a threat to the prince, but we managed it. Dutiful was almost too cooperative a victim. I feared Loudwine would see. I would have given much just then for the prince to have been trained in skilling. Our thread of joining was too fine for me to know his thoughts, nor did he know how to focus his mind towards mine. All I could sense was his anxiety and determination. Determination to do what, I could not divine. My black was not pleased with the doubled burden she had to carry, and my heart misgave me. Not only did I risk making her injury worse or permanent, but if it became necessary to flee, she would already be weary and sore. Every hitch of my black's limp was a rebuke to me, but I had no alternative. We rode, following Loudwine and his companions closed in around us. They did not look well disposed towards me. I recognized a woman from our brief battle. I did not see either of the men I had fought. The prince's former companions showed no evidence of sympathy or friendship for him now. He did not seem to see them, but rode looking forwards with the point of my knife pressed high against his ribs. We turned back and cut across the hillsides, past the barrow and towards the forest. The land we crossed hummocked oddly, and I soon decided that many years ago a town of some sort had stood here. Meadow and woods had taken the land again, but land that has borne the plough ever after lies flatter. Moss had coated the stony walls that had once divided pastureland, and grass grew upon that, amidst the thistle and bramble that seemed to love such stony places. No one lives forever. the wall seemed to say.
4 stones stacked atop one another will outlive all your dreams and still stand when your descendants have long forgotten that you lived here.
Dutiful was silent as we rode. I kept my knife at his ribs.
I do believe that if I had felt the woman take over his body, I would have pushed the blade home.
His mind seemed far away.
I used the time to assess our captors. There was an even dozen, including Loudwine.
We came at last to a cave, cut into the side of a hill. Long ago, someone had added stone walls to extend the space. The remnants of a wooden gate hung drunkenly to one side. Sheep, I thought. It would be a good place to hold sheep at night, with the cave for shelter if rain or snow came too strong. My black lifted her head and gave a whinny of greeting to Malta, and the 3 other horses tethered there. I made it 15 of them, a respectable force to take on, even if there had been more than one of me. I dismounted with the others and pulled the prince down after me. He staggered as he landed on his feet, and I caught him. His lips were moving as if he whispered something to himself, but I heard nothing. His eyes seemed glassy and distant. I set the knife firmly to his throat. If she tries to take him before the others are freed, I'll still kill him, I warned them. Loudwine looked surprised by my threat. Then,
Paladine!
He bellowed. In reply, a hunting cat came bounding out of the cave. She fixed me with a hateful stare. Her slow advance towards me was the angry step of a thwarted woman, not a cat's stalk. The prince had dropped his gaze to the cat. He said nothing, but I felt the ragged sigh of his breath as it escaped him. Loudwine advanced to the cat, and then went down on one knee to speak quietly to her.
"I've struck a bargain," he told her quietly. "If we let his friends go free, he gives us the prince unscathed. More, he escorts you back to Buckkeep and helps you become accepted there."
I don't know if some sign of affirmation passed between them, or if Loudwine simply assumed her consent. When he stood, he spoke more loudly.
"Inside. Your companions are there."
I was horribly reluctant to follow him into that cave. Out in the open we had some small chance of escape. Inside, we would be cornered. The only thing I could promise myself was that they would not get Dutiful. To cut his throat would be the work of an instant. I was not so certain I could give myself a quick death, let alone Night Eyes or the Fool. Within the cave, a small fire burned, and my stomach complained at the smell of roasting meat. A camp of sorts had been pitched there, but to my eyes it had the look of a brigand's den rather than a military encampment. The thought warned me that I should not be entirely confident that Loudwine had control of his people. Because they followed him did not mean they were subject to him. That cheery thought was entertaining me as I searched the shadowy interior of the cave, while Loudwine was quietly conferring with the folk he had left on guard there. He had not placed anyone in charge of us. All eyes were on him, and I eased away from the crowd. A few noticed my movement, but no one protested it. Jinnah's charm still rode outside my shirt, and I smiled disarmingly. Obviously, I was going deeper into the cave, not trying to escape to the outdoors. It was another indication of how informal Loudwine's command was. My fear that the piebalds were some sort of witted army dissolved into a sickening suspicion that they were actually a witted mob. My heart found my friends before my eyes. I saw 2 huddled shapes on the floor at the back of the cave. I did not ask permission. With my knife at Dutiful's throat, I walked us to them. Towards the back of the cave, the ceiling dropped and the rock walls narrowed. In that little space they slept. Their bed was the fool's cloak, or what remained of that fine garment. Night Eyes sprawled on his side, caught in the sleep of exhaustion. The fool lay beside him, his body curled protectively around the wolf's. They were both filthy. The fool had a strip of bandaging tied around his brow. The gold of his skin had gone sallow, and one side of his face was marred with bruises. Someone had taken his boots, and his narrow, pale feet looked bruised and vulnerable. The wolf's throat was matted with blood and saliva, and his breathing had a whistle in it. I wanted to drop to my knees beside them, but I feared to take my knife from Dutiful's throat. "Wake up," I bade them quietly. "Wake up, you two, I've come back for you." The wolf's ears flicked, and then he opened an eye to me. He shifted, trying to lift his head, and the stirring woke the fool as well. He opened his eyes and stared at me, unbelieving. Despair dragged at his face. "You have to get up," I warned him quietly. "I've struck a bargain with the piebalds, but you'll have to get up and be ready to move. Can you walk, both of you?" The fool had the owlish look of a child awakened in deep night. He sat up stiffly.
"What sort of a bargain?"
He looked at the charm at my throat, made a small sound, and deliberately pulled his eyes away. Hastily I tugged my collar closed, let no charm cloud his mind now. No artificial affection make him reluctant to leave when he could. Loudwine was coming towards us, Dutiful's hunting cat at his side. He did not look pleased that I had managed to talk to his captives without him present. I spoke quickly, letting my voice carry to him. You two go free, or I kill the prince. But once you are free, the prince and I will follow, trust me. And my time to speak to them, alone, had gone. The wolf sat up ponderously, levering himself off the floor. When he stood, his hindquarters swayed, and he staggered a step sideways before he recovered. He smelled foul, of old blood and piss and infection. I did not have a hand free to touch him. I was too busy threatening Dutiful's life. He came to lean his bloodied head against my leg, and our thoughts flowed in the contact.
Oh, Night Eyes.
Little brother, you lie.
Yes, I lie to them all. Can you get the scentless one back to Buckkeep for me?
Probably not.
It eases my heart to hear you say that. It's so much better than we'll all die here.
I would rather stay and die beside you.
I would rather not witness that. It would distract me from what I must do.
What of Nettle, then?
This thought was harder to share with him. I cannot steal the life of one for the sake of the other. I do not have that right. If we all must die, then... My thoughts sputtered to a halt. I thought of the strange moments that I'd shared in the flow of the skill with that great other presence. I groped for some sort of comfort for us. Perhaps the fool is wrong, and time cannot be shifted from its course. Perhaps it is all determined before we are born, or perhaps the next white prophet will choose a better catalyst. I felt him dismiss my philosophical musing.
Give him a clean death, then.
I will try. It was the merest trickle of thought between us, sieved through his pain and caution. It was like rain after a drought. I cursed myself for all the years we had shared this, and I had let my soul go yearning after the skill. The end of this sharing loomed before me, and I only now perceived the full sweetness of all we had known. My wolf was a tottering step or two from death. I would likely kill myself, or be killed before the afternoon was over. The dilemma of what one of us would do when the other died had been snatched away from us and replaced with the reality. Neither of us would go on forever. The fool had managed to stand. His golden eyes searched my face desperately, but I dared show him nothing. He drew himself up and became Lord Golden when Loudwine began speaking. The piebald leader's voice was rich and polished, his powers of persuasion like a warming cloak. Behind him his followers fanned out to witness. Your friend has summed it up for you. I have proven to his satisfaction that we never intended to hurt the prince, only to let him see for himself that those of us you call witted are not evil beings to be torn to pieces, but simply humans with a special gift from Ida. It was all we desired, that our prince could be shown that. We regret the depth of our misunderstanding, and that you have been injured in the process of sorting it out. But now, you may take your horse and go free. The wolf also. Your friend and the prince will come after you shortly. All of you will return to Buckkeep, where it is our earnest hope that Prince Dutiful will speak out on our behalf. Lord Golden's eyes travelled from Loudwine to me and back again.
And the reason for the knife is?
Loudwine's deprecatory smile spoke volumes.
Your servant has little trust of us, I fear. Despite our assurances, he feels he must threaten Prince Dutiful until he is satisfied you are freed. I commend you for having such a loyal servant.
I could have driven cattle through the gap in his logic. A slight flicker in Lord Golden's eyes told me of his doubts, but at my slow nod he bobbed his own assent. He did not know the game, but he trusted me. Before the day was out, he would curse that trust. I closed my heart against that thought. This poor bargain was the best I could do for any of us. I forced the betrayal from my lips. My lord, if you would take my good dog and go, I will soon follow after with the prince.
I doubt we shall go far or swift this day. As you can see, your dog is grievously hurt.
No need to hurry. I shall be along to join you soon, and we can make our way home together. Lord Golden's face remained concerned but calm. Perhaps only I was aware of all that battled within him. The situation did not make sense to him, but I obviously wanted him to take the wolf and leave.
I almost saw him make his choice.
He stooped to take up his once rich cloak, now stained with blood and earth. He shook it out, and then swept it over his shoulders, as if it were still a fine garment.
I will have my boots returned to me, of course. And my horse?
The nobleman, conscious of his superior birth, was back in his voice.
Of course,
Loudwine agreed, but I saw several scowling faces in the crowd behind him. Malta was a fine horse, a rich prize for whoever had captured Lord Golden.
Then we shall go, Tom. I shall expect you to follow immediately.
Of course, master,
I humbly lied.
With the prince.
I shall not leave until he precedes me,
I promised heartily.
Excellent,
Lord Golden confirmed. He nodded to me, but the fool's eyes shot me a troubled glance. The look he turned on Loudwine was chill.
You have treated me no better than common ruffians and highwaymen would have. I will be unable to conceal my condition from the Queen and her guard companies. You are fortunate indeed that Tom Badgerlock and I are willing to confirm to her that you have seen the error of your ways. Otherwise, I am sure she would send her troops to hunt you down like vermin.
He was perfection as the affronted nobleman, yet I nearly roared at him to shut up and get away while they could. Throughout, the Mistcat watched dutiful as a house cat watches a mouse hole. I could almost feel the woman's hunger to possess him completely. I had no faith that she would be bound by Loudwine's bargain any more than his mob. If she moved to take him, if Dutiful showed any sign of her invading him, I would have to kill him, whether the fool had escaped or not. I desperately wanted them gone. I smiled, hoping it did not look too much like a snarl, as Lord Golden gripped Loudwine with his eyes. Then he dared to sweep the gathered mob with that golden glance. I was not certain what they thought, but I firmly believed that he memorized every face he gazed upon. I saw anger stir in many of them at his look. And all the while, the prince stood in the circle of my arm, my knife to his throat. Ransom for my friends' lives. He stood very still, as if thinking of nothing at all. He met the cat's gaze evenly. I dared not guess what passed between them, not even when the cat glanced aside and stared resolutely past him. Anger hardened Loudwine's features for a moment, but then he mastered them.
Of course you must report to the queen. But when she has heard an accounting from her son of his experience with us, perhaps she will be more sympathetic to our position.
He made a small motion with his hand, and after a pause, his followers parted. I did not envy Lord Golden his walk through that tunnel of animosity. I looked down at Night Eyes. He leaned against my leg and pressed hard there for a moment. I focused my mind to the point of a pin. Go to Earth as soon as you may. Lead him off the road and hide as best you can. Such a dolorous look he gave me. Then our minds parted. Night Eyes tottered after him, stiff-legged but dignified. I did not know how far he would get, but at least he would not die in this cave, surrounded by hounds and hunting cats that hated him. The fool would be beside him. That was as much comfort as I could find for myself. The mouth of the cave was an arch of light. In that halo, I saw Malta brought to the fool. He took her reins, but did not mount her. Instead, he led her in a slow walk, one that matched the pace Night Eyes could sustain. I stared after them. A man and a horse and a wolf walking away from me. Their figures dwindled smaller, and I became aware of Dutiful standing in the circle of my arm, his breathing matching mine. Life walked away from me, and I embraced death here. I'm so sorry, I whispered by his ear. I'll make it fast. He already knew. My son's reply was the barest stirring of air. Not yet. A small corner still belongs to me. I can hold her off. For a time, I think. We will let them get as far as they can.
Chapter 26 Sacrifice. Although it is commonly spoken of as the Mountain Kingdom, that territory and its rulers do not at all follow the Six Duchies concept of what constitutes a true kingdom. A kingdom is most often visualized as a single people in a common territory, ruled over by a monarch. The mountains do not lend themselves to any of those three defining limits. Rather than a single folk, there are the roving hunters, the migratory herdfolk, traders and travellers with set patterns of routes, and those who choose to eke out a living on scattered little farms throughout the region. It is easy to understand that these folk may share few common interests. It is natural, then, that the ruler of these folk is not a king in the traditional sense. Rather, the line began with a mediator, a wise man who was adept at arbitrating the disputes that were bound to arise between such disparate peoples. The legends of the Chayurda kings abound with tales of rulers willing to offer themselves as ransom, to risk not only wealth, but also their own lives for their people. From this tradition comes the honorific the mountain people bestow on their ruler. Not king or queen do they call their monarch, but sacrifice. Chivalry Farseer, of the Mountain Kingdom. They moved in, drifting like silt, until Loudwine's folk stood dark between the light and me. I gazed round at the staring circle of my enemies. The daylight behind them made it hard to distinguish their features in the dim cave, but as my eyes adjusted, I studied each face. They were mostly young men, and among them four young women. None looked older than Loudwine, no old blood elders here. The piebalds were a young man's cause. Four of the men had the same large, square teeth, brothers, or at least cousins. Some seemed almost neutral, but none looked friendly. The only smiles I saw were gloatingly hostile. I loosened my collar again. If Jinnah's charm made any difference, I did not perceive it. I wondered if any were related to the man I'd killed at the trailhead. There were animals with them, though not so many as I would have expected. Two hounds and a cat were there, and one man had a raven on his shoulder. I kept my silence, waiting, with no idea as to what would happen next. The prince's cat had never moved from where she crouched on the floor before us. Several times I had seen her glance aside, but each time her eyes had eventually returned to the lad, burning with a peculiar fixation that made them seem human. Loudwine had gone to the mouth of the cave to make his false farewell to Lord Golden. Now he smiled confidently as he came back to confront us. "I think we can dispense with your knife," Loudwine observed, evenly. "I've kept my part of the bargain." "It might not be wise," I cautioned him. Then I lied. "The boy tried to get away just a minute ago. The only thing that kept him still was the knife. Best I keep it on him until she's..." I sought for the words. "All the way in," I finished lamely. I saw one or two faces twitch with uneasiness. Deliberately, I added, "until Paladin takes his body as her own completely." I saw one woman swallow. Loudwine seemed unaware that this troubled some of his followers. His affable manner never wavered. "I think not. It pains me to see you menace a throat that will soon belong to my kin. Your knife, sir. You are among your own kind here, you know. You have nothing to fear." He extended a hand for it. Experience had taught me that those most like me presented the greatest threat to me. But I let a slow smile spread over my face and took my knife from the prince's throat. I did not give it to Loudwine, but sheathed it at my belt. I kept one hand always on Judival's shoulder, holding him at my side. Here, where the cave narrowed, I could thrust him behind me if need be. I doubted that need would arise. I intended to kill him myself. 20 years ago, Shade had drilled me repeatedly in all the ways there were to kill a man with my hands. I had learned silent ways, and swift ways, and ways that were slow. I hoped I would be as quick and accurate as I had once been. The most satisfying tactic would be to wait until the woman took the boy's body and then killed Judival so quickly that the woman would die with him, unable to flee back into her little cat's body. Would I still have time to kill myself before they pulled me down? I doubted it. Best not dwell on such thoughts. Suddenly the prince spoke up for himself. "I won't struggle." He shrugged clear of my hand on his shoulder and stood as straight as the low ceiling would allow. "I've been a fool. Perhaps I deserve this for my foolishness. But I thought..." His gaze had been travelling the faces that surrounded us. His eyes seemed to know where to linger, and in the wake of his glance I saw uncertainty kindle on a few faces. "I thought you genuinely believed me one of your own. Your welcome and aid seemed so real. My bond with the cat, I never felt anything like that.
And when the woman came into my mind and said that she loved me, his voice hesitated over those words, but he forced it on. I thought I had found something real, something worth more than my crown or my family or even my own duty to my people. I was a fool. So, her name was Peladine, was it? She never told me her name. And of course I never saw her face. Well, he folded his knees and sat cross-legged. He opened his arms to the staring cat. Come, cat, you at least loved me for myself. I know you like this no better than I do. Let us both be done with this. He glanced up at me, a swift glance, fraught with a meaning I could not discern. It chilled me. Don't despise me as a complete fool. The cat loves me, and I love the cat. That much at least was always true. I knew that when the creature climbed into his lap, the contact would strengthen their bond. The woman would cross into him easily. His dark eyes were steady on mine. I saw Cotricken suddenly in his features, in his calm acceptance of what would be. His words were for me. If by doing this I would be freeing the cat of her, I would rejoice. Instead I go to share her entrapment. We shall be two that she bonded to, simply for the use of our bodies. She never had any need for our hearts save to use them against us. Dutiful Farseer turned away from me, closing his eyes. He bowed his head to the advancing animal. There was not a sound, not even an indrawn breath, in the cave. All watched. All waited. Several faces were white and taut. One young man turned aside, shuddering, as the cat stalked up to him. She pressed her striped brow to the prince's, marking him as cats do. As she swiped her face against his, her green gaze brushed mine.
Kill me now!
The sharp mind-to-mind contact was so unexpected I could not reach to it. What had Jinnah's cat told me? That all cats can speak, but that they choose when and to whom. The mind that touched mine was a cat's mind, not a woman's. I stared at the little hunting cat, unmoving. She opened her jaws wide but soundlessly, as if a twinge of pain too great to express had passed through her. Then she gave her head a shake.
Stupid brother to a dog, you waste our chance. Kill me now!
These words struck my mind with the impact of a blow.
No!
Cried Dutiful, and belatedly I realized he had not been privy to her first words to me. He clutched at the Mistcat, but she launched from the floor to Dutiful's shoulder and at me, heedless of how her claws scored him in that spring. She flew at me, claws raw and mouth wide. What is so white as a cat's teeth against her red mouth? I tried to reach my knife, but she was too fast. She landed on my chest, the curved claws of her front paws hooking securely into my flesh as her hind legs ripped at my belly. She turned her face sideways, and all I saw were teeth descending on my face as I fell backwards into the corner of the cave. Other voices shouted, "Peladine!" Loudwine roared, and I heard the prince's agonized cry of, "No, no!" But I was occupied with saving my eyes. I pushed at the cat with one hand, as I dragged at my sheath knife with the other, but her claws were well set in my flesh. I could not budge her. I twisted my face aside as we went down, inadvertently baring my throat to her fangs. She seized that opportunity quite literally, and as I felt her teeth enter my flesh, thwarted only by the beads of Jinnah's charm, I managed to pull my knife free. I did not know if I fought the woman or the cat, only that the creature intended to kill me. It mattered, but not in a way that would stay my hand. It was awkward to stab her as she clung to my chest, for her spine and ribs turned my blade twice. On the third time, I finally managed to sink the metal into her. She let go of my throat to sound her death yowl, but her claws remained firmly fixed in my chest. Her hind legs had shredded my shirt. My belly was striped with fire. I pulled her body off mine, cursing. But when I would have flung it aside, Dutiful snatched it from me.
"Cat! Oh, cat!" he cried, and clutched the lifeless body to his, as if it were his child. "You killed her!" he cried accusingly.
"Peladine!" Loudwine asked wildly. "Peladine!"
Perhaps if his bond animal had not just been slain, Dutiful would have had the presence of mind to pretend his body held the woman's mind. But he did not, and before I could regain my feet, I saw Loudwine's boot flying towards my head. I flung myself aside into a roll and sprang to my feet in a performance worthy of the fool's younger self. My knife was still in the cat's body, but my sword still hung at my belt. I dragged it free and charged at Loudwine.
"Run!" I bellowed at the prince. "Get away! She bought your freedom with her life. Don't waste that!"
Loudwine was a bigger man than I, and the sword he was drawing would give him a sizable advantage in reach. I gripped my hilt two-handed and took off his forearm before his weapon cleared his sheath. He went down with a shriek, clutching at the spurting stump as if it were a cup held aloft in a toast. Shock held the mob back for an instant. Barely time for me to take two steps and crowd Dutiful into the alcove behind me. He had not fled, and now it was too late. Perhaps it had always been too late. He went to his knees, the cat in his arms. I swung my blade in a madman's wild arc, forcing the mob back.
"Get up!" I roared at him. "Use that knife!"
I was peripherally aware of him coming to his feet behind me. I had no idea if he had the knife from the cat's body. Fleetingly, I wondered if he would put it in my back. Then the wave of men surged forwards, some in the front propelled only by the push of men behind them. Two grabbed Loudwine and dragged his curled body out of my reach. Someone jumped past them to confront me. The quarters were too close for anything except butchery. My first wide cut laid open his belly and slashed the face of another man as it finished. That slowed their rush, but then they bunched towards me. The men attacking us were hampered by their own numbers. When I was forced back, I felt the prince step aside, and suddenly both our backs were to the wall of the cave. He darted past me to stab a man who had just managed to slip inside my guard, and then spun to his right to defend himself. He screamed like a wild cat as he struck out at his man, and the man answered with a shriek of pain. I knew we had no chance, so when the arrow flew past my ear to shatter on the wall behind me, I was not too alarmed. Some fool wasted breath sounding a horn. I ignored it as I ignored the cries of the men falling in front of me. One was dying, and I finished another on the backstroke. I swung my blade wide, and unbelievably, they gave ground before me. I roared my triumph and stepped forwards into the gap. My body shielded Dutiful's now. "Come and die!" I snarled at them all. My free hand beckoned them in.
"Blades down!"
someone shouted. I swung my sword again, but those confronting me gave ground, tossing their swords to the earth. They cleared the way for an archer to advance on me. Other bowmen backed him, but his nocked arrow pointed straight at my chest.
"Put it down," he shouted again.
It was the boy who had ambushed us, the one who had shot Laurel and then fled with her. As I stood panting, wondering if I should force him to kill me, Laurel spoke behind him. She tried to speak calmingly, but her voice shook.
"Blade down, Tom Badgelock, you're amongst friends."
Battle makes the world a small place, makes all life no bigger than the sweep of your sword's length. It took me a time to come back to myself, and I was fortunate that they allotted me that time. I stared about, trying to make sense of what I saw, the archer and Laurel, and the folk who stood behind her, bows drawn. These were strangers, older folk than Loudwine's band. 6 men, 2 women, most carried bows, but a few had only staffs. Some of the arrows were pointed at Loudwine's folk. They had dropped their swords and stood as much at bay as I was. Loudwine was on the floor, rolling in their midst, still clutching at his stump. 2 steps, and I could finish him at least. I drew a breath. Then I felt Dutiful's hand on my upper arm. He pushed down firmly.
"Blade down, Tom," he said, evenly.
And for a moment it was Verity's calming voice in my ear. The strength went out of my arm, and I let the tip of my weapon drop to the floor. Each panting breath I took was a flow of torment down my parched throat.
"Drop it,"
the archer repeated. He stepped closer, and I heard the small sounds of a bow drawn tauter. I felt my heart begin to race again. I calculated the distance I'd have to cover.
"Hold!"
Lord Golden interceded suddenly.
"Give him a moment to come to himself. Battle fury takes him, and his mind is not his own.
He came, pushing his way to the front of the massed archers, and then stepped out between them and me with a fine disregard for the arrows that now pointed at his back. He did not even glance at the piebald, who grudgingly parted to let him through. "Easy, Tom," he addressed me, as if calming a horse. "It is done now. It's all done." He stepped forwards and set his hand on my arm, and I heard a murmur run through the crowd, as if he had done something amazingly brave. At his touch, the sword fell from my grasp. Beside me, Dutiful dropped suddenly to his knees. I looked down at him. There was blood in his hand and shirt front, but it did not seem to be his. He dropped my knife now and gathered the limp cat from the floor into his arms. He held it to his breast, as if it were a child, and rocked back and forth, keening.
"My cat! My friend!"
A look of terrible concern washed over Lord Golden's face.
"My prince,"
he began worriedly. He stooped to touch the lad, but I caught him and turned him aside. "Leave him alone," I suggested quietly. "Give him his time to mourn." Then, tottering stiffly through the crowd, came my wolf. When he reached my side, it was my turn to sink down beside him. After that, little enough attention was paid to Tom Badgerlock and his wolf. They left us where we huddled as they moved Loudwine's followers away from the prince. That suited us both, for it gave us time to be together, and free me to observe all around us. What we mostly watched was the prince. The archer, one Deerkin by name, had brought an old healer with him. She set aside the bow she had carried and came to the prince's side. She made no effort to touch him, but only sat beside him and watched him as he mourned. Night Eyes and I kept vigil on the other side of him. She looked at me once. When our eyes met, her gaze was old and tired and sick with sadness. I fear mine was the same. The bodies of the piebalds I had killed were dragged outside and slung over their horses. Too late, I heard the clatter of departing hooves and realized that the piebalds had been allowed to flee. I set my teeth. I could not have stopped it from happening. Loudwine had gone last, no longer their leader, swaying in the saddle atop his frothing warhorse and steadied by a young rider behind him. That had disturbed me most of all. Not only had I snatched the prince from him, but I had slain the animal that held his sister's soul, and maimed him as well. I needed no more enemies than I already had, but it had been beyond my control. He had gone free, and I hoped I would not live to regret that. The healer let the prince hold and mourn the cat until the sun touched the horizon. Then she looked past him to me. "Take the cat's body from him," she said quietly. It was not a task I wanted, but I did it. It was hard to coax him to give up the cat's cooling body. I chose my words with great care. This was not a time to let the skill command force him to do what he was not ready to do on his own. When finally he allowed me to lift the mist cat from his lap, I was astonished at how light the creature seemed. Usually, a dead animal, lax and lolling, seems to weigh more than a live one. But with the loss of its life, the pathetic condition of the little cat was revealed.
"As if she were eaten through with worms,"
Night Eyes had said, and he was not far off the mark. The cat was a wasted little creature, her once sleek fur gone dry and brittle, and bumps of bone defining her spine. At her death, her fleas were leaving her, far too many for a healthy animal. As the healer took the cat from me, I saw anger flicker over her face. She spoke softly. I do not know if Dutiful heard her words, but I did.
"She did not even let it keep itself as a cat would. She possessed it too completely, and tried to be a woman in a cat's fur."
Peladine had imposed a human's ways on the mist cat. She had denied her the long sleeps, the gorging to satiation, and the grooming sessions that were the natural right of a lithe little cat. Play and hunting had been denied her. It was the way of the piebalds to use the wit only for their own human ends. It sickened me. The healer carried the cat's body outside, and the prince and I followed with Night Eyes walking between us. A half-built cairn awaited the little corpse. All Deerkin's people came outside to witness the internment. Their eyes were saddened, but they brimmed with respect. Their healer spoke words, for Dutiful was too numbed with grief.
"She goes on without you.
She died for you, to free you both. Keep within you the cat's tracks she left on your soul. Let go with her the humanness that you shared with her. You are parted now." The prince had swayed as they put the last stones on the cat, covering her death snarl. I set a hand to his shoulder to steady him, but he shrugged away my touch as if I were tainted. I did not blame him. She had commanded me to kill her, had done all she could to force me to the act, and yet I did not expect him to forgive me for having obeyed her. As soon as the cat was interred, the old blood healer had brought the prince a draught. "Your share of her death," she said, as she offered it to him, and he had quaffed it down before either Lord Golden or I could interfere. Then the healer gestured to me that I should take him back into the cave. There he lay down where his cat had died, and his mourning broke loose anew. I don't know what she gave him in that drink, but the boy's heartbroken sobs wound slowly down into the hoarse breathing of sodden sleep. There was nothing of rest in the limp way he sprawled beside me. "A little death," she had confided to me, thoroughly frightening me. "I give him a little death of his own, a time of emptiness. He died, you know, when the cat was killed. He needs this empty line to be dead. Do not try to cheat him of it." Indeed, it plunged him into a sleep but one step shy of death. She settled him on a pallet, arranging his body as if it were a corpse. As she did so, she muttered scathingly, "Such bruises on his neck and back. How could they beat a mere boy like that?" I was too ashamed to admit I had given him those marks. I held my silence and she covered him well, shaking her head over him. Then she turned and brusquely motioned me to her side for her services. "The wolf, too. I've time for you now that the boy's hurts are tended. His hurt was far more grievous than anything that bleeds." With warm water she washed our wounds and salved them with a greasy unguent. Night-Eyes was passive to her touch. He held himself so tightly against the pain I could scarcely feel him there. As she worked on the scratches on my chest and belly, she muttered sternly to me. I gave Jinnah's charm the credit that she deigned to speak to a renegade like me at all. But the healer's only comment on it was that my necklace had probably saved my life. "The cat meant to kill you, and no mistake about that," she observed. "But it was no will nor fault of her own, I'm sure. And not the boy's fault either. Look at him. He is a child still, far too young to bond." She lectured me severely, as if it were my fault. "He is unschooled in our ways, and look how it has hurt him. I will not tell you lies. He is like to die of this, or take a melancholy madness that will plague him to the end of his days." She tightened the bandage around my belly with a tug. "Someone should teach him old blood ways. Proper ways of dealing with his magic." She glared at me, but I did not reply. I only pulled what was left of my shirt back over my head. As she turned away from me, I heard her snort of contempt. Night-Eyes wearily lifted his head and set it on my knee. Salve and clotted blood smeared me. He looked at the sleeping boy.
"Are you going to teach him?"
I doubt he'd wish to learn anything from me. I killed his cat.
"Who will, then?"
I left that question hanging. I stretched out in the darkness beside the wolf. We lay between the Farseer air and the outside world. Not far from us, in the central part of the shelter, Deerkin sat in council with Lord Golden. Laurel sat between them. The healer had joined them, and there were two other elders present in the circle closest to the fire. I regarded them through my lashes. In the rest of the cave, the other old blood folk appeared casually engaged in the ordinary evening chores of a campsite. Several lounged on their blanket rolls behind Deerkin. They seemed content to let the young man speak for them, but I sensed that perhaps they were the true holders of power in the group. One was smoking a long-stemmed pipe. Another, a bearded fellow, was working a careful edge onto his sheath knife. The whetting of the blade was a monotonous undertone to the conversation. For all their casual postures, I sensed how keenly they listened to what went on. Deerkin might speak for them, but I sensed that they would listen to be sure his words were what they wished said. It was not to Tom Badgerlock that these old blood riders explained themselves, but to Lord Golden. What was Tom Badgerlock but a renegade to his kind, a lackey of the crown? He was worse by far than Laurel, for all knew that though she had been born to an old blood family, the talent was dead in her.
It was expected of her that she must make her way in the world however she might, forever half dead to all the life that blossomed and buzzed and burned about her. No shame to her that she was a huntswoman to the Queen. I even sensed an odd pride in the old bloods, that one so impaired had risen so far. I had chosen my treason, however, and all the witted folk walked a wide swathe around me. One brought meat on spits and propped it over the fire. The smell was vaguely tantalizing. Food? I asked Night Eyes.
Too tired to eat,
he declined, and I agreed with him. But for me there was the added reluctance of asking food of folk who ostracized us. So we rested, ignored, in the outer circle of darkness. I refused to feel hurt that the fool had spoken so little to me. Lord Golden could not be concerned with the servant's injuries any more than Tom Badgerlock should fret about his master's bruises. We had our roles to play still, so I feigned sleep. But from beneath lowered ashes I watched them and listened to their talk. The talk was general at first, and I gathered my facts in bits and by assumption. Deerkin was telling Laurel some news of an uncle they had in common. It was old news, of sons grown and wed. So, estranged cousins, separated for years. It made sense. She had admitted she had family in this area, and as much as told me they were witted. The rest came out in an explanation to Lord Golden. Deerkin and Arno had ridden with Loudwine's piebalds for only a summer. They had both been sickened and angry over how the old blood folk were treated. When Loudwine's sister had died, he had devoted himself to his people's cause and risen as a leader. He had nothing save himself to lose, and change, he had told them, demanded sacrifice. It was time the old blood took the peace that was rightfully theirs. He made them feel strong and daring, these old blood sons and daughters rising up boldly to take what their parents feared to reach for. They would change the world. Time once more to live as a united folk in old blood communities. Time to let their children openly acknowledge their magic. Time for change.
He made it sound so logical, and so noble. Yes, we would have to take extreme measures, but the end we sought was no more than what we were rightfully entitled to. Simple peace and acceptance, that was all. Is that so much for any man to ask?
It seems a righteous goal, Lord Golden murmured attentively. Though his means to it seem...
He left it dangling for them to fill in. Disgusting, cruel, immoral. The very lack of a description let the full baseness of it be considered. A short silence fell.
I didn't know that Peladine was in the cat,
Deerkin asserted defensively.
A sceptical quiet followed his words. Deerkin looked around at the elders almost angrily.
I know you say I should have been able to sense her, but I did not. Perhaps I have not been taught as well as I should, or perhaps she was more adept at hiding than you know. But I swear, I did not know. Arno and I took the cat to the Brisingas. They knew it was an old blood gift intended for Prince Dutiful to sway him to our cause. But I swear, by my old blood, that was all they knew, or I. Otherwise, I would not have been a party to it.
The old healer shook her head.
So many will say of an evil thing after the fact, she charged him. Only this puzzles me. You know a mistcat must be taken young, and that it hunts only for the one who takes it. Do not you wonder?
Deerkin reddened, but...
I did not know Peladine was in the cat, he insisted. Yes, I knew she had been bonded with the mistcat, but Peladine was dead. I thought the cat alone, and put her odd ways down to her mourning. What else could be done with the cat? She could not make her own way in the hills. She had never lived a wild life, and so I took her to the Brisingas, a gift fit for a prince. I thought it possible,
and a hitch in his voice betrayed him,
that she might want to bond again. She had that right, if she so chose. But when the prince came to us, I thought it was what Loudwine said it was, that he came of his own will to learn our ways. Do you think I would have helped him otherwise? Do you think Arno would have sacrificed his life for such an end?
Some, I think, must have doubted his story as much as I did. But it was not a time for such accusations. All let it pass, and he continued his tale.
Arno and I rode with Loudwine and the piebalds as escort for the prince. We intended to take him to Sifferswood, where he could live among the piebalds and learn our ways. So Loudwine told us.
When Arno was taken